Welcome, folks, to the February edition of, at least for me, the favorite show I'm involved with, a priest, a minister, and a rabbi walk into a radio station. I'm Jay Horrigan, and as always, we have the very impressive Dr. Pandora Carlucci as my kind of sidekick. Pandora, how are you?
I'm fine and enjoying the day. It's always surprising to me to see the beautiful sun on the snow. Not growing up in the Northeast with snow, it was a very surprising revelation, a part of living with snow. It's lovely.
It is. The way the way it looks when you have such a bright day out here is just awesome. Awesome. We have our normal guests with us this weekend. We'll start with and say hello to Rabbi Tom Albert. Rabbi, hello. How are you?
Shalom, everyone. Shalom, Jay. Hello, everyone. And I'm so looking forward to yet another of our conversations.
We also have Reverend Kathy McAdams. Reverend Kathy, how are you doing?
I am wonderful, Jay. Good to be here. I don't know about being a normal guest, but a regular guest. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's the better way to frame it, and we'll explain that to the listeners. Be with our last guest, who we won't call normal. That's Reverend Eric Cherry. How are you, Reverend Eric?
Yeah, I'm going to embrace the abnormalness of the day and the time, if that's okay, Jay. Good to be with you all, as always.
Oh, I'm so glad we're able to do this once again. It has become, I know for me and Pandora talking to her, kind of the highlight of at least my month, because it's a unique and different type program that just not used to doing. So to be able to get together with you folks once a month is a pleasure. So as we check in, like we do and have since we started our show back several months ago, the first thing we've been asking, and Pandora and I were talking about it before we came on, we're getting close to the one-year anniversary of whatever you want to call it, the big shutdown. How is that affecting? Have you noticed any changes with the vaccine starting to roll out? Rabbi Tom, how are things with you and the folks at your temple?
So we're doing okay. People are starting to get vaccinated, obviously fewer than we'd like, but certainly more than we'd had before. And so that's encouraging. On the other hand, it still feels like we're a ways away from being able to do anything too much different. But we're now just starting to plan and think about what the future will look like. It's complicated. People are eager to keep some of the things that have happened during this, during our move to a lot of online work. There's a lot of that people like. Other parts, people are so desperate to get past it and be with each other. And so how we're going to work that all out, we will know in the fullness of time. And the fullness of time seems to be coming up, so we need to figure out what we're doing.
I muted myself there, which I'm sure there are plenty of people happy with that. I know my wife is, but she claims she could still hear me. But Rabbi, to your point, it's interesting to see in my little bubble that I'm in, some of the schools that I referee basketball at are going to have an end of the year tournament. And some of these schools in one specific league voted yesterday to let parents in from both schools as long as they've got a player on the team. They hadn't been doing that. So they think, you know, in their judgment, it is a safe setting for it. And that's something we haven't seen, geez, in a long time, 11, 12 months. Reverend Kathy, how is it impacting you folks?
Well, I think it's a little early to see much change. We're still entirely remote for church school, for adult education, for meetings. And we usually broadcast worship from the church. But Zoom turned out to have a special advantage last Sunday when we were able to lead worship from home. And that saved any of us from driving in the snowstorm. So as Rabbi Tom was saying, that this is something that, you know, we may be able to hold on to and use as an asset in the future. We've been checking in with our elderly members just to be sure that they all have access to a COVID vaccine and offering to help secure appointments for them and rides to those appointments. And it does seem like most people are interested in pursuing vaccination.
That's great that the majority of people are willing and interested in getting the vaccine. That's great to hear. Reverend Eric, how about
you? I was able to get a vaccine too because I work in hospice. So not because I'm over 75. February 1st, I got my first one.
Oh, good for you. Congratulations. That's awesome. Reverend Eric, how are folks in your congregation doing?
Yeah, I would mirror what's been shared already by Tom and Kathy. Our ministries are just about 100% online only. We're ramping up to prepare for hybrid ministry once it's safe for people to be back in the meeting house. The children's program is happening online, and right this semester, our middle schoolers are really enjoying a faith and magic curriculum. A minister who's also a magician is leading their 10-week course, and they're having a lot of fun with that. Our seniors are also quickly getting their first doses, and like Kathy, I was able to get my first dose of Moderna in early February, and hoping that that's going to, at some point, not soon, but in the next couple of months, make it possible for me to do more in-person ministry when it's safer. And at the same time, yesterday, tried very hard to get an exception made to make an in-person visit at MGH and wasn't able to. That's the reality, that it's still not safe to do that. And these restrictions are really important. Tons of respect. And the pastoral care department at the hospital does a great job anyway. So that's where we are.
It's interesting you bring up the MGH situation. I know just from family that the Brigham and Women's, Dana-Farber, and then as an extension out here in Milford, as long as their patients are healthy to get themselves in and out of the building, the earliest they're going to allow someone to go with that person is after Labor Day of this year. And then it's not a certain day. So it is extremely interesting how these hospitals have had to deal with everything that's going on. I know you folks deal with it personally in your everyday, whether it's going to see patients that are in a hospital, that are members of your congregation. Are you, or maybe in a different way, congregation doing anything special? Have you changed anything in terms of serving the community, both your own community within your respective churches, but the community as a whole? And why don't we start, since we were talking with Reverend Eric?
It's such an important question, Jay. And so I would say, I think the congregations in town and FUSF amongst them are trying to find ways to continue being mission focused in the community that match up well with the COVID virus. And sometimes that's kind of getting our own structures in order during this in-between time. And sometimes it's also really practical endeavors. And Pandora was noting before we got started that this would be a really good time to lift up the Interfaith Council's really great work in putting together a new program to support local restaurants and the Franklin Food Pantry. It's called Project Envoy. And this program invites people to choose to take out or otherwise support local restaurants on specific days. And when they do, a portion of the proceeds from that restaurant will go to support the food pantry. And it's sort of a restaurant a day. It's off to a great start. I think we're about a week and a half into it. And it's a good example of what can happen even during COVID time to support restaurants and the food pantry. So those kinds of things are going on.
I'd like to just add to that, if I may, that the group has been wonderful and the restaurants have been wonderful. I don't think we realize, you know, in a community now for 11 months, we have stepped back so far and stopped patronizing stores, patronizing restaurants, patronizing service facilities. And there's a ripple effect to that in terms of people making a living, supporting families, taking care of children, taking care of elderly population. And this initiative, which actually stemmed from the First Universalist Church and then reached out through the Interfaith Council to the other congregations in Franklin and beyond, because people in all the surrounding communities are aware of it too, reaches out to the restaurants, really ramps up the number of patrons who come. And it's been amazing trying to get a parking space to run in and get a takeaway. And you say, yes, this is great. The restaurants feel good about it. Patrons thank them for participating in Project Envoy. And the donation from the restaurant to the Franklin Food Pantry is a private donation. They give directly to the food pantry. It's not regulated. There's no set amount. You know, it's just the end of the month. They send in something. And everybody benefits. The food pantry gains. And even the home cook gets to step away from cooking a meal. And it brings us together as a community. I'm sorry for going on for so long, but it's exciting to see something that has those ripple effects into the community that shows that we are a caring community.
I think, Pandora, it's very, very important that you talk about it and get the word out there. It's, as Reverend Eric said, it's been going on for a week and a half, and I'm sure there are plenty of people that still don't know. You know, if we're able to reach even one or two individuals that decide to kind of get involved with that, it's worth it. That's what kind of I think the show wants to do, and in our get-togethers, what we want to accomplish is helping others and providing a little positivity, maybe a little light at the end of that tunnel. And this clearly is something that will help that. Rabbi Tom, yes, go ahead. Thank you for raising your hand. That was very good.
You weren't supposed to tell them that.
Behind the scenes.
I just want to add a little bit more to this wonderful lifting up of Project Envoy and remind everyone you can find it on the websites of the various houses of worship, and you can find it at franklinfoodpantry.org/project-envoy. So what I want to add to it, besides everything else that's said, is years ago, and I was moving out of a purely, you know, for-profit world into what ultimately led to this, I remember being given advice by someone who had been in the world of doing good things. And that person said to me, you have to make sure this is something that you enjoy, because if you're not having a good time with it, it's not going to last very long and you're not going to make it happen. Project Envoy seems a classic example of that. That is to say, look, what are we doing? We are helping the Franklin Food Pantry. That's a good thing. We are helping local restaurants that are in trouble. That's a good thing. But as Pandora was saying, we're also helping ourselves. We're having fun with it. It is enjoyable to get these meals. It is enjoyable to see lots of people around. And so this is just about as perfect an idea as has come along in a while. And I want to give my thanks to First Universalist Society for coming up with it. It was great, and our synagogue is fully involved.
That is just tremendous to hear. Reverend Kathy, how about with you and your congregation, things you're still doing, we're doing, etc.?
Well, I think Project Envoy has been a big focus for us as well. So I just want to add my support. People do need to go to that website to see the calendar for the particular days that certain restaurants are participating in this. And just to add that, you know, the food pantry has had so much more need. They've had so many more people coming and needing help during this time. So, in addition to enjoying a takeout meal and supporting the restaurants, you're also supporting people who are maybe even in more need than that.
I'd like to just add to that. I don't know that people are aware of this, but Massachusetts is one of the most hard-hit states right now when it comes to food insecurity in the country. You know, we think that because we have pretty progressive social programs, that it must be someplace, you know, that doesn't look like us. Well, it isn't. It is us. Can't tell you the reasons. I'm sure there that we could go into that. There could be all kinds of ideas. I'm sure cost of living is part of it. But Massachusetts is in serious trouble when it comes to food insecurity, which explain, you know, and so what our food pantry in Franklin is facing, we're facing all through the Commonwealth, and everything we can do to change that is going to be very important.
Excuse me, that's great. I what an exciting program to have out there and to help individuals. You know, it just kind of helps everybody. It helps the restaurants. It gets people going back out, whether it's takeout or actually in person. And we know that the restrictions on restaurants, they weren't completely lifted, but they changed as of Monday. They can have a little more in-person capacity, which is great. So they, you should all be praised for your involvement with this. I think it's just great. Pandora is going to take us as we head into our quote-unquote topic of the month.
Well, our topic for this month, appropriately being February, is Black History Month. And this is a month we have been recognizing and participating in a formal way since 1970. So it's been a long time, but this year, is as everything else has been different, this year our participation has been different because of COVID, changing how we interact. But yet, if you look at the electronic media, if you look at the print media, you'll see that there are pathways through books, through art, through film, through discussion, through houses of worship, through our schools. So we are doing this and really recognizing and celebrating Black History Month. And for today's conversation, we were wondering how, among your congregations, are you recognizing Black History Month? How is it influencing your congregations? And I think using that lens of faith that we incorporate with our daily lives, are there sacred stories from Scripture or from other sources that you use that are especially important to your congregations? And I was wondering, Rabbi Tom, I looked at this. You always have a story for us, and I love them because they have vocabulary that is new to me, and I always learn. And so when I was looking at Black History Month, I was wondering, how would you tie it to scripture that informs and directs your faith and your congregation?
So there are so many tie-ins, but let's talk about just two of them. First is Black history in America begins, as everybody knows now, in 1619, when the first African Americans were brought unwillingly to these shores, and were over either immediately or over a short period of time enslaved. Historians argue about the details. I'm not concerned. Pretty quickly, slavery starts and becomes the experience of most Black people in this country until the Civil War. And so in Judaism, this is a kind of natural fit, because the story of the Jewish people, and especially the story in the Torah, as we say at Passover, is me'avdut l'chayrut, from slavery to freedom. If you ask for what the core Jewish narrative is, it is we were slaves in Egypt, and ultimately were freed. The old Negro spirituals are songs that are frequently taken from this Hebrew Bible context of freedom. And so there's a connection there, and it was, particularly, and during the Civil Rights era, that among the Jewish community, this felt especially powerful. What we have learned is now the second part, which is the history part. And the thing about history is everybody's history is their own. And it is not appropriate to take Jewish history and say, oh, that's the same thing as Black history. There are similarities. There is a history of oppression. There's a history of being treated as second class or below. But it has varied and is different in America. The Jewish experience in America is different from the Jewish experience in Europe. And the Black history in America is different from the Jewish history in America. And so we have to take each person, each community on their own terms and learn about them and not assume in advance, oh, yeah, you're doing this. That's just like when we did that. It's like when you did that. Each of us needs to be heard. Each of us needs to be listened to. Within the Jewish community, we are more and more cognizant that there is a community of Jews of color, including Black Jews. The numbers, someplace between 2 and 4% probably are Black, and folks who have a Black and a Jewish experience have their own particular stories, that they're part of both communities and are aware of interactions. And so in my movement, I've been very proud to see that we have been lifting up their stories and bringing them to those of us who are not Black, and trying to see how the various connections work. So with that, my goal in Black History Month is always to learn. I studied history before I did anything else. It's always the thing I read and learn from. And, the more I can learn about it, the better. I'm currently reading Isabel Wilkerson's book, Cast. She's speaking at our rabbinic convention in March. And so I'm looking forward to going where she's gone. I read her previous book, which was excellent. And, so history matters. We need to learn it.
I like that. I like the way you said that people need to be heard and they need to be listened to. That's so important. They need to be valued and included in the conversation. And there are examples in history, but each story is unique, I think, is what you're saying. And you one experience is not the same as the other experience. And that's so much for us to learn and apply in our lives. And it can be overwhelming on the large surface, but as you break it down into the smaller components, you can begin to process it in a way. But it's still so much to learn. Reverend Eric, I saw you. Well, we are on Zoom for the listening audience. So when Rabbi Tom was mentioning the author who's going to speak at his rabbinical conference, Rabbi Eric made a gesture that indicated knowledge of this particular author. And I wondered if you, as you talk about your congregation, might you also reference that?
Well, I just always appreciate the way that Tom talks about the freedom struggle and liberation, and identifying Isabel Wilkinson's book, Cast, is a really important piece of the puzzle. I also found it to be a really important book, Tom. And the invitation that she makes is to invite Americans to understand the way that racial injustice works here is far more similar to, let's say, the caste system in South Asia, or even the caste system during the middle part of the 20th century in Germany, than we might care to admit. And that caste system has been in existence since 1619 and perhaps even earlier. She explores that truth in a very scholarly and convincing way. And I'm so grateful to her for that book. I want to say that I have mixed feelings about identifying a month as Black History Month. I think it's good that we have it. But the problem is that if it's the only month that Black history is being lifted up, then we're making a huge mistake. And if the only history we're looking at is history made by Black people and people of color, then we're missing something important. We need to be looking at history daily, not in one month. And we need to be looking at both the freedom struggle that Black people and people of color have led, and the resistance and complicity in injustice that people who look like me throughout our history have provided. So looking back, as Rabbi Tom was saying, is very important, and doing it throughout the year, not just in February, is equally important. A couple of things that are helpful on our end is, I think this part of the year really begins for our congregation on the day when we celebrate the birth of Martin Luther King Jr., and that was a wonderful beginning of this important work for us. We exchanged pulpits with Temple Etz Chaim in January, and that's been great. We are starting what we call a common read. So Unitarian Universalists all over the country are reading a book together and doing discussion and spiritual discernment on that book. And ours is called Breathe, A Letter to My Sons by Imani Perry. And I can highly recommend this this book to folks as well. It's eminently readable and transformative. And we're getting ready to start a program based on a podcast called Seeing White. A member of our congregation has experience leading discussions that are follow-ups to that podcast, and that will be a part of our Black History Month and beyond racial justice work in the short term. Lastly, I want to point out that part of the looking backwards work for Unitarian Universalists is recognizing being on the wrong side of history far too often, and not centering the vision of beloved community that that needs to be centered. And at one of the current initiatives, actually it's an initiative that goes back 3 or 4 years, is to add a principle to our statement of principles and purposes. We currently have 7, and this would is called the 8th principle project. And I just want to read what would be added to our covenant of faith if we're successful in doing this. The 8th principle says that we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. And our congregation is on board with the process of discernment related to this 8th principle, and that will be a part of our work going ahead as well.
Would this 8th principle be for all of the Unitarian Universalist societies across the country? Is this a national movement, or is this regional?
That's our hope, Pandora. So this is a decision that will be discussed this June when we gather nationally. It'll be online, but our General Assembly happens each June, and then we expect it will be formally voted on a year from June. And it's a very significant change for us. This isn't a change that we do often. The last time this statement of principles was changed was in 1985. So it is really a recentering of this very work as at the center of our faith. And I hope that we not only will change our principles, but live into the commitment that it identifies.
I think that's very exciting. I think that many of us, as we look at the generations of our families that are following us, children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, grandnieces and nephews, as they go out into the world, they are forming increasingly culturally and ethnically diverse families. And I like the idea of the 8th covenant of faith that addresses that and brings it to the forefront and makes it part of the mission. But thank you for that. And thank you for sharing that with all of us, because I was unaware of it. So I appreciate it.
We appreciate your prayers that it will happen, Pandora. That would be most appreciated.
All right. Reverend Kathy, I think we've heard a lot from Rabbi Tom and from Reverend Eric, different pathways, looking back to history, looking forward to the future and maybe new steps. Can you speak to what is going on with your congregation?
Sure. You know, as a largely white congregation and a largely white community, I'm not sure how much connection people have really had with Black History Month, other than what their children might have been bringing home from school. But I think this year is different because of the Black Lives Matter movement and the racial violence that we've seen over the past year, and how COVID has brought to light the disparities between different demographic groups. I think that people may be more aware this year. And even though the Episcopal Church is often seen as a white church, there are significant African American congregations. And we even have an African American hymnal that's called Lift Every Voice and Sing. And so I'm going to make sure that we bring some of those hymns and that culture into our worship this month. And also to talk about some of the African-American history within the Episcopal Church. There are a couple significant figures. Absalom Jones was the first African-American Episcopal priest, and he was ordained in 1802, and he founded the first African-American congregation, which was in Philadelphia. He was born a slave, became an abolitionist, And he's remembered in our calendar of saints on February 13th. So it's very appropriate to talk about him this Sunday. And then Pauli Murray was one of the first women and the first African-American woman ordained in the Episcopal Church in 1977. Before her ordination, she was a lawyer, and she was the first African-American to earn a JD from Yale Law School. So a lot of firsts. She was an activist for civil rights and for women's rights. She co-founded NOW, and she seems to have been gender non-binary. Obviously, we didn't have the language in her time for her to necessarily identify that way. But looking back, that seems to be what people think. There's a documentary about her life that will premiere this year at the Sundance Film Festival. And we've been doing some reading as well. We have a group that does book studies periodically, and we chose this time to read The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. And it's about mass incarceration of Black people. And so we're looking at ways that we can advocate for reforms in the prison system, the justice system, so that we might end some of this injustice.
Are you the book that you're reading by Michelle Alexander, is this is this an all-church read or a separate book group within the church? How are you facilitating this?
Well, the whole church is invited, and obviously we're doing it on Zoom. It usually, most of our book studies end up being a small group. It's five or six people.
I think it's interesting. Again, it's a plus coming out of the COVID restrictions and the use of Zoom. I would wonder if we don't have a larger book discussion group. It's an important subject. It's important to your congregation, and you have a different platform. This time, I'm thinking you didn't do your conversations on Zoom previously.
No.
Reverend Eric.
Well, I just want to say that, Kathy, if the invitation is opened, I bet other folks from beyond St. John's would join your book discussion on Michelle Alexander's book. It was a common read for UUs a couple of years ago, and a really important book. And maybe one takeaway here is that we need to find some ways for people of various faiths to be in conversation about books of this sort.
Yeah, we're actually finishing up our discussion on this book tonight, but I think we should find something that the Interfaith Council might want to read together.
I love that idea.
And now this radio program produced something that we hadn't planned for. That's wonderful.
It absolutely is. One of the positives that come out of this, our gathering once a month, the information and what we talk about. We have our three ministers, as we call our show, theoretically get together and come up with a plan that they want to talk about or a topic, but it always seems to go, you know, we veer off in different directions, which I think is just tremendous.
I really like it. And going back to the food security team for a quick second, that was my first involvement with so many different congregations. And it gives us another pathway to connect as a community, because we're all here together. And then to take it to the next level with a book read, that's exciting. It brings us together because we share so much in common.
Totally agree. Yeah, that is so true, Pandora.
Before we begin to bring this show to a close, I'm just wondering, because this has been an important topic and a busy conversation.
I haven't done this in a while, so it was my turn. So I want to share a very short poem / prayer by Alden Salavi, wonderful contemporary Jewish poet, because it feels to me that this speaks to our moment here. You know, we haven't even mentioned that since the last time we got together, we have a new president of the United States. We haven't mentioned that since the last time we got together, we were, I think, almost universally awed by a 22-year-old poet who just Amanda Gorman, who completely spoke to our moment. And we haven't mentioned that, you know, there is that we are in a place, I believe, of concerns for what has been done, what we've done, what others have done, and hope for where things can go. So I want to share this poem, which wasn't written for this, but it's appropriate. God, I am but flesh and blood, prone to error, inclined to holiness. Guide me, support me, lead me to a life of celebration. I hope that we can repair our errors, move toward holiness, and head as individuals and as a community to a life of celebration.
Very nice. That was great.
That is. I think it helps to center us after a rather robust discussion. It kind of brings you together and helps to bring it to closure.
Before we do close, Pandora, I just want to remind at least the group of us on here that early on when I asked a question, Reverend Cherry called it important. So I just want you all to remember occasionally I can ask something important. What people don't know is that question was written out for me by Reverend Eric Cherry. So that may be why he called it important, but thank you for that.
Okay. And you are our guiding light here. So I think it was important.
Then we are all we have a few more obstacles to overcome. If I'm the guiding light, just be aware there'll be a few more hurdles coming up in the future. We thank so much all the folks that join us and you guys to take the time on a monthly basis to prepare for the show and then be a part of it. I know Pandora and I are just so appreciative to just be a tangential, that's a big word for me, part of it. And we thank you for letting us do it and join you. And the stars of our show, obviously, are Reverend Kathy McAdams, Reverend Eric Cherry, and Rabbi Tom Albert. Thank you so much again for another great discussion, a great plan, and great guidance, I think, from all three of you for us to go forward with over the next 4 weeks or so.
And thank you to Jay and Pandora, and thank you to our behind-the-scenes folks, Pete and Keith. This is a pleasure every month, and we look forward to it next month.
Absolutely, I agree.
Thanks for your prayer, Tom. Thanks to everyone. Good to be with you today.
Yeah. I agree. Thank you all. Have a safe and healthy week.